Hey, Sean. Hey, Laurel.
Hey, John.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Oh, it's going all right, I guess. I mean, I'm actually kind of bummed because the Olympics were supposed to start today, and now we have to wait a whole nother year at least to see all that action.
Yeah, I feel ya. I am super into the modern pentathlon myself. I mean, it's got everything. It's got running, shooting, swimming, horseback riding, and fencing, all in one event. I mean, come on, you can't get much better than that.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, modern pentathlon is good. You know, I was really looking forward to watching canoe slalom. It's just like nonstop white water athleticism, raw power, intensity, people going at it against the clock.
Yeah, those are great. But I gotta say, for me, it's trampoline gymnastics, okay? When that comes on TV, I cannot look away. It's like gymnastics, but there are human beings bouncing 50 feet in the air. Like, what are we even doing? Trampoline gymnastics, that's what we're doing.
Gosh, yeah. Man, I just feel like we're missing out on so much action.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with that. I think we definitely are, but we've had a lot of action in Wisconsin political news this week. The federal government said it's sending federal agents to Milwaukee. That's pretty huge.
Yeah, and there's this constant back and forth over what the state and local governments can do about the coronavirus, including debate over a potential statewide mask mandate.
And the governor just announced that there's going to be another $250 million cut to the state budget. Pretty massive.
Well, it's no Olympics, but it sounds like a gold medal podcast to me. So let's do it. This is the WBR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, all the 2020 action we weren't expecting. That, of course, is a stirring medley of two pieces that have become synonymous with the Olympic Games, Leo Arnault's Bugler's Dream and the Olympic Fanfare by John Williams, played by the Boston Pops Orchestra. Just gets me every time.
The Olympic John, Fanfare.
I hear you, man. I hear you. You know, one of these days when it's safe, maybe we can just kind of all get together and have a nice little podcast judo session, or, you know,
like a backyard Olympics.
Yeah. We'll get the news department together and we'll have some boxing and perhaps an artistic swim, you know?
Yep.
An artistic swim.
We'll do our own Olympics.
I love it.
A little weightlifting, a little rugby. It'll be good.
Yeah. We've got a lot of training to do, but I think it'll be worth it in the end.
All right, so news action instead is what we're talking about this week. Where do we want to start?
Well, why don't we start with, I feel like, the big news of the latter half of the week, which was that the Trump administration says it's sending federal agents to Milwaukee sometime in the next 3 weeks. It's made kind of a pretty big stir over the last 48 hours or so.
Yeah, so what are sort of the specifics there? I mean, it's federal law enforcement agents coming to Milwaukee along with a handful of other cities too?
Yeah, so this was part of a Trump administration announcement on Wednesday that in addition to federal agents being sent to cities like Chicago and Kansas City and Albuquerque, that some number of agents is also going to be deployed to Milwaukee. We don't have a ton of specifics in terms of like the exact time frame, but we know that this kind of federal government response is kind of a pushback really to Black Lives Matter protesters calling for defunding local police departments. The president had a press conference with some other administration officials. And he said at the press conference that he thinks what cities are doing in having those kind of conversations or pursuing that kind of change is, quote, insanity. And so this is him kind of providing federal reinforcements to communities where he thinks additional law enforcement support is necessary.
Yeah, and I think we're looking at this for a number of reasons. I mean, for one, just like big picture, it's pretty rare to have the federal government sending in, you know, its own agents, its own troops, essentially, or its own federal police from the Department of Homeland Security to cities and states where they have not been welcomed. You know, Portland doesn't want these federal police there, but they're there. It's created. And the other thing I think with Portland, what you're seeing is, you know, none of us here are familiar with like what exactly the situation was in Portland before this started. But we've seen the videos after it started, and just sort of the, it seems like the act of sending federal police there stirs things up. And, you know, it sounds like protests that were dwindling are getting bigger again. And so you could imagine that happening elsewhere. And now that they're coming to Milwaukee, again, we, the three of us are not based in Milwaukee, but we haven't seen like a Portland or Seattle-esque situation in Milwaukee. You know, there have been a lot of protests, but there hasn't been like widespread property destruction in Milwaukee. There haven't been like regular clashes with police there. And so we kind of have to wonder what's going to happen if these federal agents come to Milwaukee. Are we going to see that kind of escalate things the way that it seems to have happened in Portland?
And I guess just to clarify, according to the White House and to the Justice Department and other officials, the federal agents coming to Milwaukee and these handful of other cities is theoretically a different mission or operation than what the federal agents are doing in Portland. In that case, it's specifically about civil unrest and protest, whereas in these other cities, including Milwaukee, it's about fighting violent crime, that sort of thing. But there has been a response from elected officials in Milwaukee saying, okay, but we really don't want to see what's happening in Portland happening here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's not just officials in Milwaukee, it's the governor too. And we know that the governor sent a letter to the president on Wednesday, shortly after he heard about these plans from the Trump administration. Part of his letter was kind of reiterating the things that you said about, you know, potentially stirring up more conflict by having an increased presence. He said that he thinks that will be the case. But he also talked about just kind of the his perceived lack of communication from the Trump administration about it. He said that he first found out about the agents coming to Milwaukee through a television interview, and that wasn't how he, you know, would have preferred that communication be made to him. So I think the dynamics certainly between, you know, state officials and local government officials and the Trump administration about these agents showing up in Milwaukee and in Wisconsin is not, it's not a rosy picture.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that's interesting to me about this, and you guys sort of both touched on this, but that, like, on the one hand, it's not super unusual for federal law enforcement and state or local level law enforcement to partner on, you know, law enforcement operations. But in this case, aside from, you know, the governor and city and state level politicians sort of coming out against this, we actually heard from the Milwaukee Police Department themselves saying, hey, you know, we're fine if these federal agents are continuing to do what they have been working with us on in terms of stopping violent crime and that sort of thing, but we're really concerned and don't want the help if this has anything to do with civil unrest or protests or anything like that.
And I think the other thing that is worth pointing out in a politics podcast, you know, everything is political, right? And there are sort of these big issues that are crowding everything else out of voters' minds in 2020. You know, people are talking about the coronavirus, COVID-19. You know, this is something voters have opinions about, no matter how much you try to change the subject. But there are also the protests, and there is also this increase in violent crime that we've seen recently. And so you're seeing the president kind of pivot to issues where he thinks he can win, and he's trying to turn it into, and he has been for a while now, kind of a law and order type election.
Yeah, and I guess this is sort of venturing into the realm of wild speculation, but does it bear mentioning that, you know, a lot of the places where these federal agents are being deployed are in urban centers that are in or near swing states for the presidential election?
We can't speak for every state, but it feels like it could be a factor in Wisconsin, just... you know, especially because we're in a situation where Wisconsin's suburban voters are really kind of this swing group within a swing state, potentially. You know, a group of voters that the president didn't do great with in 2016 and that Republicans want to bring back to the fold. You know, focusing on crime in Milwaukee could be a way to do that. I mean, he wouldn't be the first politician to do that.
All right, well, pivoting from what's sort of some new action with federal law enforcement, maybe we want to talk next about what seems like ongoing, nonstop action of COVID in our lives that just sort of hangs over everything in the background at all times.
Yeah, let's do it. And I think what happened with COVID this week, so on the surface, you could look at what Governor Tony Evers said about COVID-19 and about what the state can do about COVID-19 and say, all right, nothing changed. He's been saying that for a while, but let's set it up with some context. Governor Tony Evers was asked again this week about the possibility of a statewide mask mandate. He has said before that he's looking into it, but he doesn't think they can do that. That because of the Supreme Court's decision, the state Supreme Court's decision on May 13th, which struck down Safer at Home and, you know, said that any future orders from DHS have to go through the legislative, you know, emergency rulemaking process. The governor said he doesn't think that he can do a statewide mask mandate. And he basically said that again this week. What's different this week? More governors are issuing statewide mask mandates. Illinois has one, Minnesota, Michigan. Those are all states run by Democratic governors. But then you go to Indiana, a Republican governor unilaterally issued a statewide mask mandate. Ohio, Republican governor, statewide mask mandate. So this thing is kind of catching on, as science tells us that masks can slow the spread of COVID-19. That they can protect the community to some degree, if not the individual. So it's something that we know other governors are looking at, and we know that Wisconsin's COVID-19 cases are on this pretty steady incline. You know, if you look at the 7-day average of cases and just the general trend over time, it's going up. You know, there's a pretty steady trend upward. And you've had some local responses to that. In Dane County, there's a mask order in Madison. And in Milwaukee, there's a mask order. But otherwise, it's kind of a patchwork. And so here we are having this discussion again about the limits of the governor's power to deal with a pandemic, which may end up in court.
And to put you on the spot with some wild speculation, I mean, let's say the governor does issue a statewide mask mandate. What could possibly happen?
Well, you could imagine that he might get sued again. You know, that seems like a decent possibility, given what the court said about the Department of Health Services powers in the Safer at Home case. We don't know what the governor might do, how he might do it, but it seems like a decent possibility he would end up in court. So, you know, how might he do it, I guess, is a question, if he were to do it. We don't know, but one possibility that some Democrats, Democratic attorneys, have thrown out there is he could issue a new emergency declaration. Their argument is that the court only ruled on the DHS's powers in the Safer at Home case. They said that Andrea Palm, the DHS secretary, can't unilaterally take these steps. The court specifically did not rule on Governor Tony Evers' emergency powers, though. So those powers, under the law, once he declares a public health emergency, it lasts up to 60 days unless the legislature steps in and revokes those powers. Republicans argue that was it. You can't declare a new emergency. You've already done that. You can't just say, we'll restart the clock. The argument from Democrats is, well, the emergency has changed. You know, just because it's the same disease doesn't mean we're dealing with it at the same point in time. So that's one thing the governor could do. Again, we don't know, but it's a possibility. So if it goes to the court, then I think there's pretty interesting speculation on what the court might do, because starting August 1st, we're going to have a different court. Instead of a 5-2 conservative majority, there's going to be a 4-3 conservative majority. And remember, this was a decision where Brian Hagedorn, one of the court's conservatives, sided with the governor's administration in the first lawsuit. So I think all eyes would be then on Justice Hagedorn at that point on what's he going to do. You know, is that maybe what the governor is waiting for, is a friendlier court before he takes this step? We don't know, but that is a big change that is going to be taking place here in the very near future. The other thing, you know, just like a little tidbit to add on in terms of like what would happen if this were to go to the court again. This is just a pure speculation segment. I love it. It's great. But it's informed speculation, though. It's really informed speculation. Remember, Hagedorn ruled with the governor the first time around, but he's kind of ruling against the legislature largely because he didn't think they should be able to bring that lawsuit against Safer at Home. Mm-hmm. They were challenging a law that was written by a previous legislature. He was saying, mm-hmm. you know, you can't, you weren't harmed. You can't prove that like you don't have standing here, basically. That was sort of the foundation of his decision. So what happens if the governor issues a statewide mask mandate or, you know, some kind of a limited Safer at Home order? Who knows? Like, you probably would have individual plaintiffs bring the next case. You know, having just listened to a lot of audio on this and done some interviews on the topic, Speaker Voss said, he kind of alluded to this recently, that it'd probably be somebody would probably sue over it. Rick Essenberg of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty said, yeah, somebody would be there to take it to court. You know, I don't think it's going to be the legislature who's suing the governor again next time if we have this situation where he issues an order that they don't agree with.
Well, speaking of people suing about COVID-related restrictions, we're talking about the state Supreme Court, but the other little bit of COVID-related court news this week was something that came out of federal court about restrictions.
Right. So this was, it dovetails really well with our conversation about individuals bringing lawsuits, because the decision in this federal case had everything to do with standing and who brought the lawsuit and who they were challenging. So what the judge ruled in this case, which was a case that was going after a variety of local, like a wide swath of local governments all across Wisconsin about their local orders related to COVID-19. Essentially, the judge said, I'm throwing out this lawsuit. I'm not ruling on the merits of the arguments in here. This is just too broad of a challenge. There are too many defendants in this case. And so it's not appropriately before the court. And if you want to bring this kind of challenge, you need to sort of take this away, whittle it down, make it a little bit more specific, a little bit more direct. And he said, you've got 30 days to do that. And if you do, we can talk again. but no thanks for right now, essentially.
Because it was basically a whole bunch of different people sort of objecting to a whole bunch of different local orders, as far as I understand it.
Yeah, so it was, the original filing was 17 different plaintiffs from all across Wisconsin. It grew to 24, I think, over the course of, you know, things working through the system. There were more than 10 local governments mentioned in the lawsuit, like, so local health officials, health department officials, police departments, executives, a wide range of people. And what the judge said in his order to dismiss the case as it was, you know, initially formed was, there are too many different circumstances here. There are too many different communities involved that each have their own set of, you know, circumstances in terms of, you know, where, how the virus is, you know, transmitting there, how many cases there are, how quickly, things like that. He just said it's not judicially possible to look at this wide ranging of a case.
So sort of sticking with COVID action, but more tangentially related, you know, having to do with the financial impacts of the pandemic, we had state budgetary news this week from the governor.
Yes, all of this stuff is happening amid the COVID-19 pandemic, which...
you used that word. You're not supposed to use that word.
Yeah, I had a little discussion.
Pro-amid.
Yeah, we had a little discussion on Twitter with WPR Newsroom about the proliferation of the word amid in 2020, because every story you do is like amid the pandemic. I shared a recent headline I wrote which had that word. I didn't tell them, though, but I'll say it here, that John K. Wilson added the amid to my headline. I think my story was just about, like, governor announces budget cuts, and John's like, amid pandemic? And yeah, sure.
I'm like, why is he announcing budget cuts? Well, because there's this huge financial downturn because of the pandemic.
I actually like the word too. Context. I like it too, and I'm not prepared to relinquish it yet. Okay, so the governor this week announced that there would be $250 million in savings that agencies would have to find in the current fiscal year, and that it would follow the same process that the state used in the last round of savings, you know, the last cuts that the governor announced in the last fiscal year, where they cut $70 million from the budget. That, you know, it's funny. Like earlier this year, guys, we were talking about a budget surplus and who was going to spend $250 million more on schools. Now it's like $250 million cut. Like, I bet it, like, most people didn't even notice it this week with everything else going on.
The 2020 news cycle, it's something.
Yeah. It's the Olympics of news.
Right. I feel like it's the decathlon of some sort. That's the one with 10, right? DECA?
Yeah. That's a winter Olympics thing, I think. All we get is the modern pentathlon in Summer Olympics and the good old-fashioned boring triathlon.
Yeah. I think, you know, we don't have a lot of just what we need to mention about this $250 million cut at this point. It's just, we don't have a lot of details about where state agencies are going to find these efficiencies, as they are sometimes called. We know what the last round of cuts looked like, that $70 million cut that Sean mentioned. A really big part of that, what came from the UW system. UW system cut about $41 million of the $70 million. And I laugh because I don't know how to introduce his title, I guess. Are we going to do former governor, president, UW system president Tommy Thompson?
I noticed what the UW system Twitter account called him this week. Just said, like, Tommy.
Just Tommy.
He's just Tommy.
All right. Well, Tommy wasn't happy about... the prospect that the UW system could be seeing more cuts in this $250 million iteration. He said, we've already done a lot in the last round, so leave us alone. But the governor said during a press availability that the UW system is definitely going to be seeing some cuts. They're in conversations with them about it, and that expectation has been shared. So we know they're coming from there, at least. The rest of it is kind of TBD.
You know, a couple things. First, I don't feel like we should let this hang out there too much longer. The decathlon is a summer event. It consists
really?
Of 10 track and field events. Yeah, yeah.
Just, oh, all right. Yeah. I guess it just... I'm not seeing it on our list of sports we looked up.
I don't know why. You know, this was like before your time of awareness, but back when I was a kid, there was this like really big Reebok ad campaign for like Dan and Dave, I think, or something. They're both decathlon athletes from the U.S.
And that's and awesome.
They were supposed to be good, but they had like a bad Olympics. Anyway, the other thing I wanted to mention about this budget stuff that like was maybe interesting only to me, but you remember the first time that the governor announced these cuts, the $70 million in cuts, and Speaker mm-hmm. Voss put out a statement saying, yeah, I support this. This is good. I asked Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald's offices for statements this time, and then they didn't have anything to say. It's kind of, I mean, it's a noteworthy amount of money, right? So I wonder what's going on there. I mean, I guess my thinking is that the relationship between the governor and legislative leaders is pretty bad right now. It's always been kind of bad, but it just seems like on the scale of bad to pretty bad, it's on the pretty bad end of things right now.
Yeah.
Also, I imagine they probably want to wait to see, you know, the devil's in the details. Probably they're going to criticize however he does it. It's a very good chance. You know, there's not going to be a right answer here for the governor. And also, you got to think about what he's doing here. This is a $250 million cut. It's really a lapse, you know, where these agencies will be kind of returning money to the general fund to shore up the state for another year. But he's doing this without the legislature's input. So they might not like that. It is something that governors of both parties have done for a long time. So it's not out of the ordinary. But I don't know. Just thought I'd throw in like a little more speculation here before we end this podcast. It didn't have enough already.
Yes. And if the governor, say he wanted to get the input from the legislature, the way he would do that is introduce a budget repair bill, right? And he's said that he's not going to do that, at least up until this point.
Yeah. I think eventually it's possible he may have to. We do think about $250 million being a lot of money, but I am not sure that it's a lot of money. I feel like it may be the tip of the iceberg in terms of what the state needs to cut next year in the next budget. And yeah, if the governor has, if the cuts are big enough that he actually has to cut, you know, and he needs the legislature to step in, they are going to have some ideas to cut that maybe are not the same as his. And I think the next budget's going to be pretty ugly, guys. I think it will be pretty rough, but at least it will come right around Olympic time in 2021.
Well, we'll have something to decompress and watch while covering all that news. Just real quick, I want to point out, I'm looking at the Olympic sports list for the Tokyo Games, and either they're just not doing track and field, or that was left off by mistake. So
this
that's
is
why
puzzling.
That's why decathlon didn't jump to mind, was because there's just no track and field on the list. I mean, it's not happening either way until next year, maybe. But we'll have to dig in and see, you know, whether that whole pillar of Olympic sports is going to be happening.
Yeah, we've said so much. We've said goodbye to so many things from the pre-COVID world. Why not track and field, the world, yeah, the world's oldest sport.
Scrap that.
Yeah, let's get rid of it. Time for some 3-on-3 basketball.
I mean, why not? Anyway, Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
So it turns out that track and field events were in fact planned for the 2020 games. They're just listed under the absurdly generic sport of athletics. And one of the subdisciplines of athletics? Decathlon. Speaking of which, if you'd like action-packed, insightful politics podcast content coming your way like a well-thrown javelin almost every single week, all you have to do is subscribe. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and many other podcast apps, and you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime at wpr.org/politics.